Welcome to Parents' Perspective. An English teacher was impressed by a student's poetry, but the student had such a stuttering problem that he was too embarrassed to read his own work aloud. With his teacher's long-term encouragement, this young boy worked hard to overcome his speech problem. His efforts paid off. Eventually, he became a professional actor, famous for his rich and expressive voice. His name is James Earl Jones. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we are lucky to have with us two experts who deal with stuttering problems. Dr. Ralph Gemelli is a child and adult psychiatrist who has had a special interest in working with stutterers. We're glad you could join us, Dr. Gemelli.
I'm happy to be here today. Thank you.
Dr. Diane Paul Brown is Director of Clinical Issues in Speech-Language Pathology for the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. She specializes in child language development and disorders. Dr. Paul Brown has two sons, one in high school and one in college. Welcome, Dr. Paul Brown.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Gemelli, how common is stuttering in young children and in older children and in adults?
Anywhere from 4 to 10% of children will have an episode of stuttering between 2 and 8 years of age.
There are about 3 million Americans who stutter, and of those, about 1% are adults. And stuttering affects individuals of all ages, but occurs most frequently in young children between the ages of 2 and 6 years.
If a child hasn't begun to stutter, could he become a stutterer in adolescence or adulthood?
It's possible, but it's not the typical pattern. Okay.
Yeah.
It's more likely to occur at the young ages.
In my experience, when someone has begun to stutter after age 9, especially in adolescence and in adult life, stuttering usually is pretty closely in sequence to some devastating event or something that's happened in the person's life, an unexpected loss or something of that nature.
Called traumatic stuttering.
Right.
So there's a different trigger than a developmental factor.
Yeah, right.
Are there different ways of treating that than you would treat somebody who starts out with a stuttering problem at a younger age?
There are different ways of treating people depending on the cause of the stuttering or what might bring it on. And I think that would be a case where there'd need to be a very close partnership between a psychiatrist and a speech-language pathologist.
I actually had a man about 8 or 9 years ago, and the woman he was seeing for about 2 years, suddenly he found out was having an affair with another man. His anger reached the point where gradually over a 3-week period, he started to stutter. Now, there was a family history, which gets us into a genetic predisposition you have to have. The stuttering became part of a post-traumatic stress disorder, and he couldn't make use of doing a psychotherapy with me until I referred him to a speech therapist. So after a period of speech therapy, he was able to make use of the psychotherapy much more. And when he was with me, after he had the speech therapy, if he started to stutter, and the stuttering had reached the point where he really wasn't being able to produce much words at all, I would say to him, you really don't want to talk to me today, because if you did, you would be using your speech therapy. And he'd say, right, I'm using my stuttering not to talk. So you could see the interplay between the two there.
Pretty obvious in that case.
Right.
It's interesting that he could at least verbalize that he was on top of that. We started to talk about traumatic stuttering, but I'm sure there are lots of different kinds of stuttering. Dr. Paul Brown, can you tell us the different kinds that there are?
Yes, and actually much more common is what's called developmental stuttering, where children who are just beginning to learn language and use language in more complex ways, you will frequently see those young children, ages 2 to 3, 4 years, start to stutter more frequently. A certain amount of disfluency is natural in almost all young children and adults, but it seems to be exacerbated during that time when there's a burgeoning of language learning. And in fact, estimates are as high as 80% of those children will spontaneously recover or outgrow that stuttering pattern. And speech-language pathologists would be able to make that distinction of who those children are who are going to outgrow the stuttering during that developmental period, or those where it might persist.
Now, there are different kinds of stuttering. People repeat words, or they repeat syllables, or whatever. Are they treated different ways, or that's all lumped together as stuttering?
There are different patterns of stuttering, and sometimes those stuttering behaviors or disfluencies are an indication of what would be a typical developmental pattern of stuttering versus the kind of stuttering that might persist. And some of those are a child with typical disfluency might just repeat whole words or phrases. I want to go out. Whereas a child who might be at risk for persistent stuttering might repeat parts of sounds, parts of words, like table instead of table, just table. Typically, a child with developmental disfluency might just have very easy repetitions and not appear at all concerned or frustrated by their speech, whereas a child who might be at risk for stuttering might prolong sounds or appear to struggle with their speech or show facial grimaces and be troubled, obviously troubled by their speech. So that's the kind of differentiation a speech-language pathologist would be able to make and help a parent to determine if it is a developmental pattern that the child's going to outgrow or a persistent stuttering that would necessitate treatment.
I would add that the most important thing that the speech pathologist would look for is developmental disfluency. Children, when they learn speech, fall in love with hearing their own words, as you know. Mama, mommy, mama, mommy, mama, ma. The mother would say, oh, okay. But there's no struggle in that. And that kind of child may then start to repeat a lot more words. Sometimes that kind of child figures out that if that child repeats a lot, the mother gets off the phone. The mother is on the phone for 2 hours in the afternoon, and if the child repeats, the child gets the mother's interest. Or, you know, there can be some factors that would make the child want to repeat words. But the important place where people get concerned, where the speech pathologist would, right, is when the child goes from mama, mommy to and you see struggle. And that's when the child would be thought of having a real stuttering problem. Because the child at that point, right, believes that he cannot control what he wants to say. And what I say is a child is a stutterer when he knows the exact words he wants to say, but he can't say those words. He feels out of control. He can't say the word without pushing it out.
Another indication of stuttering that's going to be more persistent or not developmental disfluency is how often it happens. The more it happens, the constancy of it is another indication that it could persist and is not just a developmental or an intentional factor.
Right.
We'll take a short break and be right back to continue our discussion of stuttering.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Ralph Gemelli and Dr. Diane Paul Brown about stuttering.
Sometimes there are subtle factors happening within the home that are causing the child to be under a certain amount of stress that even a very well-trained child psychiatrist would need 3 or 4 hours with the mother, father, and the child, and still the family is able to keep those out of the evaluation. I had one little girl who her mother on the way over, she had started to stutter. She was age 5. The mother on the way over told her, now look, you do not bring up that we are not too happy with Dad working 80 hours a week. And if you bring that up, I'm going to be very upset with you. So the mother left this completely out of the evaluation. The speech pathologist asked about how's the relationship with your husband and everything else. And the mother said, fine, everything's great. And they tried to do some speech therapy with this child. And this child did not improve. The child was referred to me, and I met with the mother. And finally, the mother admitted that she and her daughter were both angry at the father. Once the mother was able to address this in the family, the little girl's stuttering was gone within a couple of months after she was verbalizing to her father how angry she was. But the gag order was on in the evaluation. And parents can be, you know, because of their own anxiety, they can be very good at hiding things if they want to.
Although there are certainly instances where a family situation might exacerbate stuttering in a child who has that predisposition, I don't want to have parents have the impression that their behavior causes stuttering in most cases. That is just not the case. I also want to say that it's a good idea to make sure that the speech-language pathologist is, in fact, qualified. And if you check to make sure that the speech-language pathologist is certified by the American Speech-Language Hearing Association, and also do check that they have expertise and experience with stuttering. The American Speech-Language Hearing Association provides free information and referrals. There's an 800 number, and it's 800-638-8255. Again, it's 800-638-8255, and that's the American Speech Language Hearing Association's helpline, where we can provide referrals to ASHA certified speech language pathologists and free information.
And this is a nationwide referral service.
It is a nationwide referral service, correct.
How wonderful for parents.
We were going to ask both of you what are some of the causes of stuttering. We kind of brought some of those out. Is there anything we've left out in terms of causes of stuttering?
We've talked about the developmental cause, a genetic factor, and psychological factors, all of which may cause or contribute to stuttering.
I want to make clear, though, that I do not agree that a child who has a genetic predisposition to stutter is just going to stutter. Modern developmental genetic research is showing that there is always an interplay between a genetic vulnerability and things that are happening in the child's life that are causing some degree of stress that makes the genetic vulnerability come to fore.
Contemporary research does show that there is a neurological base to stuttering, and also observations that stuttering tends to run in families have been confirmed by genetic studies. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that every child who has a certain genetic makeup is going to stutter, and it's also not to say that there might be factors in the home that might exacerbate or trigger stuttering.
So in other words, if parents know that in their family there's somebody who stutters, they should just keep that in the back of their head, that that may be a way that their child might react to a problem.
I think what I would say is if parents think that their child has begun to manifest a stuttering problem, I think you should take the approach, what kind of stress is my child under? And I think the parents have to say, let's investigate, you know, the speech route, but let's also investigate the stress route. And I think with some of these children, they should have a child psychiatric evaluation also. I saw a little girl once, five. She began stuttering 2 days after her dog was put to sleep. I met with the parents, and the mother looked sad. I said to the mother, you look sad. The father stood up and said, there's no room for sadness in this house. I'm a medical student. I got a lot to do. Sadness is a bad emotion, and it brings everybody down. When I said to his daughter, do you feel sad about your dog being put to sleep yesterday? She stuttered so much she was
she
mute.
She couldn't get it out.
Okay.
Aww. How do parents find somebody they can trust to do that kind of an evaluation for a child?
Well, it's best if the parents work with the speech pathologist. Usually the pediatrician and the family practitioner is going to refer the family first to the speech pathologist. Not all speech pathologists will make a referral. I mean, if the speech pathologist believes that there is no stress factor involved, it won't happen. You can call the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry in Washington, D.C., and wherever you are in the United States, they can let you know where a child psychiatrist is in your area. You can call them at 202-966-7300, or you can go on the internet and it's just aacap.org, aacap.org.
Thank
Great.
You.
Another resource.
Yeah.
Do you want to add something, Dr. Paul Brown?
There are some things that parents can do to create a communication environment that is less stressful, that in any speaking situation may help. But again, I don't want to give the parents the impression that by creating this more easy environment, it can stop stuttering in a child who was going to stutter. But some things that a parent can do in addition to contacting a speech-language pathologist is to listen closely when the child talks, pay attention to what the child's saying rather than how they're saying it, and to speak more slowly in their own speech mm-hmm. and model slow speaking. Frequently you hear people say to a child who stutters, well, slow down, no, go slower, and it's actually much more effective to mm-hmm. slow your own rate of speech than to tell a child to slow their rate. And provide opportunities for the child to talk to you without distractions. And all of these are ways to reduce the pressure to communicate.
Would you say, either of you, that children can outgrow stuttering?
In fact, almost 80% do outgrow the stuttering. That's the developmental pattern of stuttering. But there are different kinds of stuttering. And that's why it's very important to have a professional speech-language pathologist involved to make sure that you're going to be able to tell the difference between who's going to outgrow it and who's not. And early intervention is helpful. It's easier the earlier that you Right. work with a child. And as a child gets older and it's more persistent and they've had this pattern longer, it's more difficult and treatment will take longer.
I agree. The longer the child has been stuttering, it's harder to eradicate, like anything. If you teach a child how to play basketball and he's dribbling the wrong way and his wrist turns out instead of turns in and he does it for 5 years and you take him to a coach and you say, coach, correct this, the coach is going to say, not once a week. It'll take 5 years. I have to see this child every day, you know. I mean, these are patterns that get laid down, right?
Yeah. In terms of adults' reactions to a child who's stuttering, even non-parents, I'm sure there are certain things that we should remember to do and certain things we should absolutely not do. For example, finish the sentence for the right. child, that kind of thing. Can you help us out with that?
Sure. Don't tell your child to speak differently in any way. Don't tell them, relax, slow down, take your time, think before you talk. That's all going to create more pressure if, in fact, stress is one of the contributing factors. Don't call attention to the child's speech. Don't place your child in a situation where their speech is going to be on display. Don't look distressed if your child is disfluent. And don't call your child a stutterer. Or I would add, don't call anybody a stutterer. Be respectful of person first, language person who stutters, rather than labeling somebody as their identity as a stutterer. Don't interrupt your child. Don't criticize or correct your speech, or as you said, don't complete your child's sentence.
That goes right along with all the time we tell parents, don't put labels on your child. It causes all kinds of stress. It also brings on behaviors that you might not have been looking to bring on. We'll take a short break and be right back to finish our discussion of stuttering.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number
to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Diane Paul Brown and Dr. Ralph Jamelli about stuttering.
I think if a child has been stuttering, say, for a while, a year or two, I think the parents have to break the ice at times and say, how come you're not telling me how you feel about your stuttering? It must be hard for you. The child may withhold that from the parents if the child thinks that the parents are going to be unhappy. If the child says, I don't like stuttering, it's embarrassing. It's a very embarrassing thing. Our society, I don't know if it's changing, so much of the child's good feelings about himself revolve around speaking. Every day he's told, don't act, speak, talk, express yourself. So I think here's where a child, we're out of etiology now. If you carry this around for a long time and you don't get help, the child is going to be depressed. If he's not depressed, he's denying it. He's denying it to the parents, and that could be bad because I've seen some adolescents who have been stuttering for 8 or 9 years. By the time I see them, they are very, very depressed.
But you'll also see, in addition to depression or social problems as a result of the stuttering and people's negative reaction to it, is what's called secondary behaviors, where in addition to the disfluent speaking pattern that I described, you'll see behaviors like pounding on a table in order to get a word out, having facial grimaces, pulling on eyeglasses, mm-hmm. patting the head. And that's why, again, the earlier you treat stuttering, the better it is before these secondary behaviors that may at one time have been associated with getting a word out smoothly now become more routine and unfortunately don't result in fluent speaking.
My recommendation is if parents bring their child to a speech pathologist, if the parents work with you and the child does not make progress in speech therapy, I think that child deserves to have a psychological evaluation with a child psychiatrist. If a child believes it's better not to really let out his feelings, the vibrancy, you know, the music, his mind is not going to let him make use of speech therapy. It only makes sense.
Dr. Jamelli, could you explain to us what stuttering feels like to a person who stutters?
Anybody can come close to how it feels through empathy. If you try to put yourself in the shoes of a child, adolescent, anybody who is burdened with this problem, any interaction you're going to have in the next 3 or 4 hours where you want to say something very specifically and you feel like your speech apparatus is completely out of control. One of the toughest things is that a person who is a stutterer hates to be in any kind of situation where he has to give specific information, his name. Or stutterers don't like to tell people when they're out in a restaurant when his wife, if he's an adult, or his husband says, what are you going to get? They usually say, I don't know. Because if they say, well, I'm going to get the roast beef and stuff, soon as the waiter comes up to the table and says you, everybody expects him to say roast beef. He can't say roast beef, so he blurts out the pasta. It's a very embarrassing situation because you can't substitute words. It's terribly painful, embarrassing. It doesn't give you a feeling of being in control of your body also.
A lot of feeling of powerlessness.
Powerlessness and shame.
Well, our special thanks. We are feeling very empowered right now because we've had such wonderful information and insights from Dr. Ralph Jamelli and Dr. Diane Paul Brown, and you've helped us develop a much better understanding of such a very important problem for parents to deal with.
Well, I want to say something to you, and that is that you actually helped me at one time recently because I had the privilege of hearing you both speak about your new book, Parents as Mentors, and asked you a question related to my son, and you provided a very insightful comment. So I want to thank you,
goodness.
Too.
Wow.
It's a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you. Great. That was not a solicited advertisement at all. Our gift for today's lucky caller is an autographed copy of our new book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. We'll look forward to hearing from you. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors.
You can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email to parentsper@aol.com. Or again, call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website through our shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.